Welcome to Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombel, and together we're showing medical expertise in a human way. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm your host, Dr. Yasser Sombel, and today we're tackling a topic that hits close to home for patients and providers alike: why healthcare often feels stuck in the past. With us today is Dr. Alan Badeau, an AI evangelist and CEO, Alan Badeau LLC, who's redefining how technology can elevate and reconnect patients to the heart of medicine. With over two decades of experience in AI, cybersecurity, and advanced computing, Dr. Badeau's mission is to close the gap between people and technology, ensuring that innovation serves humanity, not the other way around. Dr. Badeau, welcome to the show. This is actually a very great topic because AI is such a big thing now. So, you know, obviously many patients feel their doctors are still using outdated tools, systems, and, you know, myself probably included, people are still using things like UpToDate and whatnot to try to get their information from, which is kind of archaic. And so let's talk about why and how this technology can finally bring patients' healthcare up to speed. And so, you know, the biggest thing I would say is, why do many patients feel like their doctors are working with yesterday's tools?
Well, I think part of the reason is because some of them are. The, you know, I went to a doctor's visit about 2 weeks ago, and they were still all using paper completely across the board, which really was a surprise. But I think most of it is because if you look at, you know, the infrastructure that the tools are run on, they're old and they're kind of outdated. The interfaces that they may have to interact with are a little bit older and outdated. And, you know, it's so difficult for them to get access to their information in some cases, and not in all cases, of course, but in some cases, that, you know, they just see those bits and pieces of it, and that's what they're putting together. When you know, you have to fax something into, you know, a record into, you know, an office, most people don't even use faxes anymore. And so that it's that kind of perception, I think, that, you know, causes, you know, patients to feel that way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we struggle with that just in my practice in general, right? I mean, you get lab data, it's not interfaced with the system itself. You got to scan the document, put it in there, and it's a lot of extra work all the way around. And so, you know, coming to that is, how can AI actually help bring healthcare into present day for everyday people?
Yeah, and this is where you've got to be really careful. You know, I've participated in some of these activities. You know, I've deployed some. You've just really got to be careful in, you know, not being too fast, not being too aggressive in how you are, you know, having these systems interface with patients. You know, we have developed some tools, you know, cognitive, you know, agent systems, you know, and they can act like that intelligent middle layer really between, you know, the patients and the fragmented, you know, healthcare systems. And, you know, that is important because they're not necessarily communicating anything that hasn't been approved by, you know, the provider or, you know, the staff. They're not collecting, you know, and storing information and you know, PII type of information. And so really it's trying to create an intelligent, almost like a top layer operating system that allows everything to communicate with each other and have a better experience for the patient, because that's what they're used to. They're used to being able to order, you know, with a mobile app and it just happens, right? All the other stuff behind it, they don't think about, but, you know, getting to that point where the experience is seamless and it's a pleasant one and they can do all their payments and all of their interactions via technology like that is really what everybody is striving for. It's just the infrastructure behind it that it's got a lot of catching up to do.
So I think that's really interesting because, you know, I mean, it's really easy for younger generations to deal with this, right? I mean, we're also used to technology, et cetera. But when you think of, you know, a lot of people that are using healthcare, and the majority of them are the older population, the Medicare population, et cetera, right? And they may not be as tech savvy. And, you know, I mean, I have patients that, for example, say, don't email me a you know, an invoice, or don't do this by email, call me, because I don't really use email that often. So how do you adopt that technology and make it work overall for people and not just a subselect of population?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, you know, most folks are used to dealing with chatbots, and chatbots are awful. They're a terrible experience for a lot of folks. When you look at, you know, the technology that we're developing today, it's really, you know, a cognitive agent is an agent that is trained on your processes, your practices, language, service desk, all of those, you know, capabilities built into one. And, you know, as it's helping patients get through the process, not just asking them, you know, questions or telling them to do certain things, it's giving them advice, it's answering specific questions that they have, and it's really becoming a digital concierge. That's what I want people to think about, is that, you know, if the right system is used and it's trained the right way, then it really is something that can help, you know, independent of the generation that's trying to use the system, it can help them through the process and answer those basic questions so that they feel like, oh, somebody's actually telling me what I should do, how I should put it in, where I should get the information, what it would look like, all of those types of things a cognitive agent can do today that, you know, even 2 years ago, chatbots had a hard time doing. And so it's about changing that experience, and it's gotta be a good one when the patient is interacting with something like that, especially, you know, if it's an older patient. Now, also, it's got to be able to handle different types of transactional, you know, communication. It's got to be able to call and use, you know, the phone for one thing. It's got to be able to send texts. It's got to be able to send emails. It's got to be able to do all of those things at the same time. So irregardless of what patient is using what, then the AI will be able to communicate with them in the preferred manner that they have.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about an example of technology, and I think I want to maybe narrow that down a little bit more, if that's okay with you. So how do you feel about, I guess I've been approached in my practice about, you know, the artificial intelligence kind of answering service, right, where you have an AI answering your phone so that nobody ever goes to voicemail. So basically, for example, if my staff is on the phone with an insurance company, it makes it hard for them to answer the phone. And I've made it a rule in my practice that the phone has to be answered by a live person, because I think that's much better than, you know, push one here, push six here, push eight here. And so, for example, have you ever been part of technology, for example, like that, where there's an artificial intelligence that is always answering the phone, whether it's taking messages or whether it's, you know, sending a message to a staff to refill a prescription or to make things more efficient, not only for patients, but for the practice itself?
Oh yeah, that's a big challenge for you all. I know that, you know, there's only so many staff that you can have, and there's always, you know, there's never enough, right? Because they're doing so many other things. You know, with today's technology, if, you know, you have it answering the phones, in many cases, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between an agent that is, you know, trained and a human. Now, there are a couple of issues though that I have with that, is that, you know, I believe in full transparency. I believe that everybody should know that they are talking to, you know, an AI agent. And that also means that there's gotta be an out or an off ramp for them somewhere. But if you've got the AI agent doing basic things like collecting information, helping schedule appointments, you know, getting, you know, leaving messages and follow-ups and those kind of things, then that can take some of the workload off of your front desk staff that, you know, is running around and trying to do everything else. But you've got to be careful, because, like I said, you don't want it to, you know, collect certain types of information per se. But at the same time, you've got to make sure that it's interacting with a human and somebody is watching it, because, you know, at the same time, we know AI is not always right. Sometimes it'll make mistakes. And if it makes a mistake with a patient, you know, let AI cannot get sued, right? Who's the only one that can get sued in this situation? So you've just got to be careful.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think it goes back to the notion, you know, everybody's kind of thinking that AI is going to replace human beings. And I don't really think there's ever a replacement for human beings because, as you said, you know, AI is learning off of us for the most part right now. And yes, it's advanced and yes, it can think through things. But at the end of the day, you know, humans still have a role in whatever's happening because we are actually the ones building the AI per se. How we end the segment.
No replacement.
And what do you feel, what do you hope to see, you know, for people who feel that they're left behind by old healthcare world? I mean, what do you hope for patients to see moving forward?
Well, I want patients to be able to get information, you know, whatever they need, a lot faster, and be able to take that information wherever they go. But it's also, you know, from a bigger picture perspective, you know, when you hear hospitals that are being, you know, hacked and all of their information is potentially stolen and those kind of things, if you know, a patient has, you know, a little bit of confidence that their identity, their credentials, all of their healthcare information can stay private and it can stay protected, you know, that's one of the areas that I think AI would really be able to help facilitate that process. And so really it's just about protecting their information and their, you know, their credentials so that it's one less thing that they got to worry about.
Gotcha. All right. So coming up next, we're going to talk about, you know, when you get a diagnosis that feels cold and personal, even frightening. And Dr. Bedeau is going to share with us how AI can help doctors bring compassion back into care. I think actually this is very interesting because it crosses the role between humans and artificial intelligence. So stay with us. We'll be back after this short break to discuss this further.
Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation.
Welcome back to Real Medicine, Real Lives. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Real Medicine, Real Lives and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. On the move, you can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle and culture, and beyond. Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. Welcome back, everybody, to Real Medicine, Real Lives, and we are here with Dr. Alan Bedeau. And in this segment, we're going to talk about one of the hardest moments in medicine, hearing a diagnosis that feels impersonal or cold. Many patients describe this as a moment they stop feeling human in their own care. But with technology evolving, AI can actually restore humanity, not remove it. So, Dr. Bedeau, welcome back. And I think, you know, we talked about this. I think this is a really interesting topic because it crosses technology with being human in general, right? And how do you bridge that gap? And so in modern medicine, this conversation process, you know, why does this conversation be hard in modern medicine about difficult diagnoses?
Yeah, I think the challenge has been that, you know, how care is provided really hasn't changed. I think it's everything else around it. If you look at, you know, the push for, you know, electronic records in medicine, and now your doctor, when they come in the room, instead of flipping through your chart and looking at you and having a conversation, now they're looking at a computer screen and they're trying to answer questions that the, you know, the software needs in order to do billing, right? And so, you know, those conversations are just, you know, interaction wise, those are different. And, you know, the amount of time that, you know, doctors have to spend with patients, I know in some cases, you know, a lot of folks feel that it's not as much as it used to be because they're just trying to get through, the process, and then also trying to get through a certain number of patients so they can maintain, you know, profitability. People forget that medicine is not just about, you know, helping people, saving people, and, you know, taking care of the sick. There is a business aspect to it that, you know, providers have to be mindful of which is also why, you know, you don't see a lot of individual, you know, practices anymore. They're part of larger groups because the expense is there, the cost of school is there, you know, and everything else around it is driving us for that. And so in a lot of ways, it just disincentivizes the conversations that we used to be able to have in the past. And that's a difficult thing to overcome when it's just software that is, you know, driving those baseline interactions.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And you're right. I mean, we are really stuck to having to check off all these boxes, having to do all this stuff when you're seeing patients and, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's, and it does make it more difficult nowadays. And so what advice would you think, or how do you think AI can help physicians or care providers in general make people feel more heard?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of times what AI can do is it can help with the cognitive overhead that is, you know, required in that kind of relationship. You know, you've got a nurse or somebody in there that's doing some documentation. In many cases, you've got the system that is checking the boxes, you know, behind you, the EHR system that you're using to get paid for those kinds of visits. What AI can do, though, is it can look at all the records, it can look at all the, you know, relevant history, and then it can document and draft, you know, documentation in real time from the conversations that are taking place. Now, the great thing about that is that allows the doctor, though, to minimize the amount of time that they're breaking eye contact with the patient. And, you know, just acknowledging, just looking, just talking to somebody while you're facing them is a huge difference in what the perception is going to be. And so, you know, if you think about your medical provider is walking around the room, you're having a great conversation, you're getting information from the patient, the interaction is more personable, and then you have a third party that is the AI that is participating in that discussion, then it allows the doctor to really focus entirely on the patient, while at the same time, the patient feels like, hey, you know, we're having a great conversation here. It's not, I'm just typing, or he, you know, the doctor's just typing things into the computer. They're actually listening to me, and they're trying to hear what I have to say. That is the way that AI and really technology is, you know, this ambient, you know, clinical intelligence type capability. That's what is going to enable doctors to give their attention back to the patients and not have to worry about that other stuff.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of these, you know, promotions for these AI scribe things that you can like download and use. And I've never really thought about it, but now that you mentioned that, that may be something I need to look into even for my own practice. I mean, I try my best to make sure I maintain eye contact, and I don't write notes at all, you know, in front of patients or do any of that stuff. I just kind of talk and go do it all later after clinic. But yeah, that may be even helpful. And it may just make things more efficient in general, right? I mean, sometimes it's not just even about, it's about improving the quality, but also about efficiency. So, you know, if your efficiency is improved, then AI has done its job, and it's a great tool to have, because the more efficient you are, the more patients you can see, and the more effective you are in seeing those patients, probably.
That's right. And I know you are spending a lot of time taking notes after the fact too. It's probably at least an hour or two, you know, after clinic that you're spending doing just note taking. That is something that, you know, they didn't teach you that in med school, probably, that you were gonna have to go through hours of note taking like that. And why not eliminate that? Give those 2 hours back to you so that you can do something else with them.
Right. And so can you share a story you feel, you know, where a patient felt cared and benefited from the power of AI tools?
Well, actually, I can share my own story around that, because, you know, going into, you know, a medical clinic in Miami, they were fully, fully AI-ified when it came to those sort of things. And so I walked in, you know, had a you know, a mobile app that I could just, you know, scan. It would allow me to go to their portal. I was able to interact with, you know, their agent that they had. I put in all my information. And when I got on, you know, got in to see the doctor, it was like my entire history. They had processed that. They were asking some basic questions. We were having a good conversation. And it felt very different than what it used to feel like. And I think that is the exciting thing about AI, in that if you put an AI cognitive agent with a subject matter expert, whether it's a medical provider, whether it's an engineer, for goodness sakes, those interactions drive, you know, interactions with others. And if it's spot on and it's great, it's overall fantastic. If you miss just a little bit in a couple of those areas, it can be a nightmare. And so that's why you've got to be smart. You've got to do it the right way. And these guys obviously did it the right way.
Great. And you know, to finish out things, you know, what message would you give somebody who feels like, holy crap, you know, all this AI stuff is going to just make my care feel just robotic? You know, it probably already feels robotic just by all the pressure in healthcare, and what we mentioned earlier is for documentation, billing, overhead, all the stuff that you have to carry around and do. And so it does feel somewhat robotic and a little bit impersonal at times. And so introducing AI into all this could even make it feel more robotic. And so what message would you give to people who are worried about that?
I don't think they have to worry, because, you know, there've been a couple of studies. One of the studies was that, you know, a hospital system tried to introduce a robot into the system that would just go room to room and just have a conversation with people, but it was always happy. And I'll tell you from my experience, if I'm in the hospital, I'm not happy. I don't want to be there. Most people don't want to be there. And when you send in a happy robot, that doesn't make me happy. And it makes me feel annoyed. And, you know, so these types of things, though, whether it is emotional, whether it's, you know, feeling processed and very, you know, robotic, as you were saying, that is, you know, that's not going to be adjusted from taking AI and replacing all of those other things. It really, where I've seen the biggest benefit is when you take the AI and you give that to the provider, you give that to the nurses, you give that to the staff, then they realize, if I go in and my interactions with the patient are, you know, I don't have to be in a hurry to get out of there. I don't have to be in a hurry to go to the next room or whatever that is. You know, I think it just relaxes everybody. It really eliminates a lot of tension. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll help the patients in the long run.
Gotcha. Dr. Bordeaux, before we close, can you tell people, you know, if they want to learn more about your AI and how it's helping medicine evolve, where can they connect with you and your work and your resources?
Yeah, the easiest place is my LinkedIn account, you know, just Alan Bordeaux. And then also they can come to my website, which is alanbordeaux.ai, or they can watch my AI Today show on Now Media, and it's on Wednesdays at 5 Central Time.
Great. All right, everybody. Up next, we're going to take a break here, but we're going to look at how technology can help bridge a healthcare gap for people living in rural areas or often feel forgotten. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back to continue this discussion with Dr. Bordeaux.
Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Real Medicine, Real Lives. I'm your host, Dr. Yasser Sombol. I'm joined by Dr. Alan Bordeaux, who's helping us explore how technology can make healthcare more accessible, even for people who are far from major hospitals or major cities. Dr. Bordeaux, welcome back. For many families who live in rural cities and areas, you know, they have limited access to care as it is, including technology. God knows it's hard to get even a Wi-Fi signal when you're in a small town somewhere, right? And so I think AI or technology, obviously, if used wisely, can close this gap. And so to start out, why do you think people in remote areas often just get less care?
You know, it's This has been going on for a long time, though. It's not an AI perception, but the big difference, though, is that those small hospitals, those rural hospitals that used to be there, are either going under or they are becoming, you know, really like a specialist center where they've been taken over by a larger entity, and that is what's driving it. So geography, economics, and infrastructure are really driving those. And specialists are not going to be in a rural area because, you know, the population, the density, and the financial impacts of that are just not good. So you said it, though, too. Broadband access, especially in certain places, it may not even exist in many of those places. And so, you know, as you are looking at those kinds of things, it's forcing a lot of folks to have to drive miles, you know, hundreds of miles in some cases, or hours. And that's frustrating for some folks. But, you know, it's always going to be, you know, technology can help you in certain places, but you've got to have the fundamental infrastructure there to enable it.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I have patients that drive 2.5 hours to come see me in my clinic, you know, because they're not happy with the care they're getting down in that smaller town area. So definitely true. And, you know, even in a big city like Houston, you know, we have, you know, the suburbs of Houston, which there are things we can't do in the suburbs that we need to ship to the medical center to have done. So I completely understand where you're coming from. And so how can AI and advanced technology, for example, bring that quality care to rural communities and help in that fashion?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at how far telemedicine has come since COVID, you know, that really is, you know, a great story, because remember going into COVID, it was, you know, there were so many questions about it. Is it going to be covered by insurance? What's the reimbursement stuff going to look like? Is the technology going to break? Oftentimes it did. But now, you know, it's taken on, you know, a life where now you can actually start to augment that telemedicine software and technology with things that AI can really do, which is diagnostics. It can do, you know, help facilitate discussions. It can do lookup of patient information almost at, you know, the snap of your fingers, right? And so having a rural clinician who has some AI-powered decision support capacity, whatever that is, allows folks to start to live, you know, to deliver more specialized care. Now, or, you know, specialized, you know, diagnoses that they can make quicker and get them to a, you know, a more appropriate type of, you know, setting. But that is the real power behind it, because, you know, you're allowing the patient to stay where they are. They don't have to travel a couple of hours or whatever that distance is that they're doing. And they're having a great, you know, interaction with the doctor. But at the same time, the doctor is able to, again, focus on them, because the AI may be getting all their background information. It allows them to spend more time with their patients. And again, it's that experience that is going to drive a lot of that.
Yeah, and I think it brings us to the next question. I'm sure you're aware of this since you're so into artificial intelligence, but the amount of power it requires to power artificial intelligence, to make it work, et cetera. I mean, that's just been a lot in the news lately about nuclear energy and all these, you know, deals that are being made with artificial intelligence. And so, and the amount of gigawatts. I mean, I heard something where the amount of gigawatts needed, or they're opening these data centers that is enough to power 2 times the city of Houston, right? So, I mean, if you think there's 6 million people in here, 2 times that is, you know, 12 million homes, basically, which is a lot of energy and a lot of power. And I think that becomes the biggest hindrance, in my opinion, for extending this artificial intelligence, you know, nationwide or in all across different people. And so it brings me to my next question is, what do you think becomes, you know, when this problem can be solved, and how many years are we looking at for this to be an, you know, something that we can really have all around the country and to people in remote areas? Because the idea is great,
yeah,
but the implementation is a much different thing with the amount of energy and power it requires, you know?
Yeah, you are 100% spot on. You know, the data center boom has really, you know, been focused around, in the past, it was a lot of times it was around, oh, it was government stuff. It was some, you know, some compute stuff. It was, of course, AWS. But now the amount of power, just to power and train the models that are there is huge. You know, that's why, you know, AWS is trying to, you know, well, I think they did sign a deal with Three Mile Island so they can get nuclear generated power. Why, you know, Google and other folks are trying so hard to, you know, get into those other alternative, you know, types of sources so that they can, you know, get an advantage. If you think about the US as a whole, you know, one of the stats that I saw that, just around Washington, D.C., we have more data centers than all of Russia and Europe combined. And that's just around the D.C. area. So, you know, our grid has not been modernized in many years for a whole bunch of reasons, political, you know, financial, whatever those are. And trying to then stick AI in the middle of that and say, yeah, we're going to require about 3 times of what you're normally providing, and we're going to need that in a couple of years, then that's scary for a lot of folks. And so the economics around that are not great. However, it's either we're going to stay, you know, ahead or we're going to fall behind. And power generation is going to be the big driver. Every single state has tried to get one of those big guys, though, whether it's Google, you know, Meta, whoever it is, to come to their state and build a data center. And right or wrong, you know, everybody realizes that the need is there. They've got to do something. They want to try to stay, you know, ahead. But these powers, you know, these data centers, there are 5-year waits on certain parts just to get the data center up and running. So if we start with a baseline of saying, maybe 5 years, we'll take off a year because it's been going on for a little bit. So we'll say 4 years before we can, you know, at least get enough out there so that everybody can take advantage of it. And I think I'm being aggressive when I say 4 years. I think it'll take long, much, much longer. I think probably double that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, and I think this is all great in theory. It's just implementation of it, I think, is going to be the driving factor. And so, you know, I mean, if we you can't get your cell phone to work in an elevator till today, right? But you know, I mean,
That's
it
right.
loses po it loses reception in an elevator. You would think we'd be past that point with how much we use cell phones nowadays, but we still aren't, right? You can't get good Wi-Fi service sometimes in a certain part of a city. And I live in Sugar Land, and I think Xfinity is horrible out there. You know, I got to reboot my Wi-Fi all the time. So I just can't
Me too.
imagine, you know, the amount of power this is going to take and how we're going to get to that point. And anybody who's used even ChatGPT or any sort of artificial intelligence, you talk enough in one chat, right? You start to get the spinning wheel on your computer because it's got to think long enough to be able to go back to the information it has and come back to you again to answer you, et cetera. So, and I think that's all power related and, you know, data center related because there's just only so much capacity it has to store. And
Yeah,
so what,
we have a long way to go.
yeah, so what, based on that, you know, what gives you, I mean, I think it's pretty clear how this would benefit people, you know, at other facilities if we can get this to work. But, you know, what gives you hope for the future that where a zip code doesn't really dictate your care anymore? So you can be anywhere and you're going to get good quality care, and how artificial intelligence is going to help that.
But I think the biggest thing for me is that I've seen a lot of people, whether they're, you know, on the business side from a medical perspective, or if they're on the care side, they're starting to try it. They're starting to launch an awful lot of pilot projects. They're starting to have, you know, in-house smaller areas where they are testing and trying AI, and they're going in the right direction. If there was such a, you know, a pushback that nobody in the medical field was trying anything with AI, I wouldn't feel very good about that. But because folks are starting to understand it, starting to understand the good things about it, but then realizing that it can't solve everything and it shouldn't solve everything, and it never should make a decision without a provider being the final say in that. That is what gives me hope that AI will be able to really help get rid of some of those barriers. You know, that's the big thing, that the trajectory of the technology is pretty clear. It's not going away. However, you know, I think within the next 10 years, I think that is when most medicine will have some sort of AI utilization that will be standard.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what it brings. I mean, AI is definitely great. So when we come back, you know, I think I want to explore the other side of innovation, and that's really the data. And, you know, in medicine, we have this thing called Dr. Google, right? Everybody searches everything up and comes to tell you what they found. And that can be very hard to understand and way overwhelming for patients. And so I'd love to hear your explanation in the next segment about how AI can turn confusion into clarity.
Stick with us. We'll be right back with more real stories, real breakthroughs, and real lives transformed. And we're back. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol. Let's dive right back into today's medical conversation.
Welcome back to Real Medicine, Real Lives. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand, whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs in both English and Spanish. Preferred podcasts? Listen to Real Medicine, Real Lives anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. Covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more, Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. Welcome back, everybody. We're wrapping up this insightful episode with Dr. Alan Bedeau, and in this final segment, we're going to talk about the flood of medical data patients face, scans, numbers, results, and the confusion that often follows. And I think AI might be just the bridge that turns the data into understanding. And I think that is really this segment, we're going to show how AI can interpret complex medical data and empowering patients to understand their own results and engage in their own healing process. Welcome back, Dr. Bedeau. So, as a physician, obviously, clearly, you know, I get people all the time that come in and say, I Googled this, I Googled that, and, you know, they want to tell me everything. And Google's great, and I think actually, to be honest, in my opinion, AI has made Google look archaic to a certain extent. And because, you know, you put something in Google, you get 50 different pages that you got to look through to figure out what you're looking at exactly, whereas AI has really streamlined that information for you in a very, you know, concise way. And so when patients say, you know, I got results, but I don't understand them, how could AI help in explaining to patients those results, but also not creating fear and not creating confusion in that fashion?
Well, that's the hard thing, because everything and all the interactions that 98% of the population has, they are using ChatGPT or whatever their chosen interface is, just like they used Google. And what that means is that the prompts and the questions that they are asking oftentimes are not reflective of all the information that the AI needs to make a good decision or a good diagnosis. And in some ways, it is a huge benefit, because you can put some basic things in there. You can say, I've got this scan. What does it mean? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? That's probably the worst question that you can ask an AI model, because, you know, it's so general. It's so difficult for it to answer those kind of questions. So, you know, if you're like me and you watch a commercial and you see a drug come up there and it lists out 48 different symptoms that it can cause, and of course you've got all 48 of them, and it's a challenge, AI can help explain some of that, but at times it may jump to a conclusion that may just not be the right one. The best thing that people can do is they can take those results that they get and they can say, what questions should I ask my provider so that I can better understand what is happening, so I can better understand what the treatment plan is, so I can better understand that if I don't take my medicine, it's going to do X, Y, and Z, and I'm not going to feel better. So if they would use it to help facilitate the discussion, as opposed to trying to get an answer that the AI probably shouldn't be answering, the experience overall would be a lot better. And I know that it would be better for you as well, because people aren't going to say, these are the 15 things that ChatGPT said that I have. Let's start walking through each one and we'll check one off as we go along. That's not a good way to use any AI, and it's not a good way to use your time.
I agree. And I think it's gonna take me to my next question, although this wasn't in our topics, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. So I think this is where it shows the disconnect between technology and human experience, right? So for me as a physician, I've seen millions of labs and millions of scans over my years of experience. And there are certain parts of lab data, when somebody gets a basic metabolic panel, for example, there are certain parts of it that I have ignored over the years, because most of the time it's not within the normal lab limits, but it may be slightly off, but it's not something I do anything about 90% of the time anyway. And so it's irrelevant to me what it says. But to a patient, when they look at it, and it says, well, this is a little bit low, or this is a little bit high, they're concerned about, should something be done about this, right? And so if they were to put that into an artificial intelligence model, it would say, well, this is abnormal, and it may come up with 50 to 100 reasons why this is abnormal and raise speculation to the patient that something may be wrong, whereas me as a clinician may look at it and be like, this is nothing you worry about, you wouldn't do anything about this anyway. Right. And so I think it goes to the question you were talking about, what people should ask the artificial intelligence, and how would you propose to people, what should they ask them when it relates to things, and how to streamline that information when they go see their clinician?
Yeah. And that's really the important thing, because you don't want, and I tell folks this all the time, you do not want AI making a decision for you. Would anybody feel comfortable if they had cancer or they had something else to just say, okay, I'm going to AI and I'll let it dictate everything that I'm going to do? No, we're not going to feel good about that. It doesn't help anybody really, except the folks that are training the AI to try to improve. You've got to think about improving the relationship between yourself and the provider. And if you go into the provider and you say, AI said these 10 things, exactly the example that you gave, then from your perspective, you're thinking, holy cow, here we go again. From their perspective, they're saying, oh, geez, they're not listening to me and they didn't answer all 15 of my questions. I only got through 7 of them. That's not the right way to do it. If you go in focused, You tell them, these are the things that I'm concerned about. These are the reasons why I'm concerned about. And you get that kind of dialogue from ChatGPT or something else. That's a great way to use it, because it's giving you perspective. It's giving you some questions to ask, focus questions even better, right? But then you're not going in from a combative perspective. You're going in from, I'm concerned, I need some help translate it, because medicine has its own language. Engineering has its own language. We can talk past each other saying exactly the same thing and we wouldn't even know. So if you're a patient, then that only gets, really exasperated, because everybody's so concerned about, oh, they said this, I don't understand that. And then they lose focus on what that is. ChatGPT, those tools can help with that piece of it. That's why they should use it to really facilitate the discussion, as opposed to it said this, because it's wrong half the time anyway.
Right. And I think I'm going to make this analogy, and maybe you can comment on this. So and this is not a knock on certain specialties in medicine, but for example, a radiologist. I order a chest x-ray on a patient that I've seen. In that chest x-ray, I have to put a diagnosis as to why I'm ordering it. So I say, they're short of breath. And that radiologist looks at the x-ray, they interpret the information, and they always come back with, I mean, unless there's something obvious in there, like a big cancer or a mass or something, they come back and say, there is an infiltrate on the in the lung in the chest x-ray. It may be correlated with either volume overload, so somebody's retaining fluid, they're in heart failure or whatever, or pneumonia. They can't tell you which one it is because sometimes they look alike to a certain extent, and they're also not seeing the patient. So they don't know if that patient has a fever, that patient is coughing. Does that patient have a history of heart failure? Do they have, their legs are swollen? They only know that the patient is short of breath, and so they're making an inference based on their clinical experience of reviewing x-rays and what each one looks like, and at the same time, what the information that's given to them, and they're making an inference based on the image that they're seeing. When I get that information back, my job is to interpret that in the context of the patient that I saw, the history that I took, and the physical exam that I performed. And so I think for me, AI is kind of like a radiologist, right? It screens based on whatever information you give it, but it doesn't necessarily have the experience, or it doesn't have the physical exam, the history, and all the other information that goes with that patient. And I think, do you think patients should look at it that way when they are, for example, asking ChatGPT questions?
Oh yeah, yeah. And you know, I think that's a great way to look at it. Now, what I would also remind patients of is that, you know, AI models are very specific. So for instance, if you have a chest x-ray and it's the AI model is trained to look at for pneumonia, for example, or that cloudiness, that difference in the image that it sees in the chest, right? It's gonna make a diagnosis based on that specific model. But that doesn't mean that it's gonna be able to catch a lung nodule or something else that is hidden in the background that a regular radiologist would be able to see. If the AI doesn't have that training, it's not gonna be able to catch that. So the difference is even more fundamental that patients have to remember that if the AI isn't trained on it, it's not gonna be able to get it. And if you're just submitting pictures into a certain app, whatever that is, and it's giving you some sort of, you know, diagnosis around that, it's doing it because it's trained or it's been told you always have to provide an answer. You can't say, I don't know. That would be awful if ChatGPT said, I don't know. Well, it wouldn't be awful for some of us, but you know, a lot of folks would think it's broken. So it's giving you something that can be based on a false assumption right from the get-go, and then it just goes awry and it goes out even farther. So patients have to remember, there's a reason they put the disclaimer at the bottom that says the AI model can be wrong often, all right? And when you're dealing with your health, that is one area where using it, again, to facilitate a discussion as opposed to diagnose something is always going to be better for you in the long run than it will be, you know, it's more than likely not going to save your life. Let's put it that way. If you need some ice on an ankle, okay, great. That's fine. It can tell you to do ice, hot, whatever that looks like. Anything else, I wouldn't, I wouldn't use it for those types of things. And I sure wouldn't go in and say, it's got all, you know, these diagnoses. Which one is it, doc? Because we never talked about some of these other things over there. It's always about context and where the AI is and how much it's been trained. And I assume it hasn't been trained on all that stuff, which makes it a lot easier for me to sleep at night.
Great. Dr. Bedeau, and before we close, can you just remind people how to connect with you about your information?
Yeah, sure. Easiest way is LinkedIn, or watch my show on Wednesdays on Now Media. It's called AI Today. You know, I get a lot of emails about these types of things. I love answering them for the audience. And, if folks have questions, I can help even generate prompts for them so that they can use for, you know, that relationship building with their doctors. More than happy to do that.
Great. Dr. Bedeau, thank you for helping us see how innovation and humanity can work hand in hand to build a healthier future. To our viewers, remember, technology should never replace compassion, it should empower it. When data becomes understanding and innovation becomes empathy, that's when medicine truly heals. I'm Dr. Yasser Sombol, and this has been Real Medicine, Real Lives, where science meets compassion and everyday story reminds us the power to heal. See you next time.